Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, May 29th. I hope everyone had a good Memorial Day weekend. And in case you haven't heard, the NBA Finals are set and they feel a little bit familiar. This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer in Chicago covering the NBA, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine as the Pistons offseason rolls on, and for staying with us all summer, too, as we'll give you a dose of Pistons news and analysis as we continue on here, getting ready for next October, getting ready for the draft now, and the NBA Finals, of course. We'll be into our 3 days a week schedule starting this week, with episodes on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then into more of a 3 day a week of the five going forward there, unless news warrants. As we know, the Pistons news could break on the front office search and also the coaching search as time goes on. But today we're going to be talking Game 7, an interesting couple of days to effectively end the NBA season. I have some thoughts on that. I'll have part one of an interview that I had last week with Ken Calvert, the former Pistons PA announcer in the Silverdome for a few years, and also a lot of the Palace run before Mason took over on the microphone in the arena as the public address announcer during the going-to-work era. But for Pistons playoff playback today, we'll be going back to 1991, the end of the Bad Boys. This is one of those painful weeks of Pistons playoff playback anniversaries. I want to apologize for that. If it brings back some bad memories, we got three tough ones lined up here for Pistons fans. But if you want to learn more about the conference finals and the NBA finals going forward, the place to be is going to be Locked On Warriors and Locked On Cavaliers as well, and also the Locked On NBA podcast, which will be giving you daily updates on what's going on with the finals and the league going forward. But like I said, we had some exciting Game 7s, as you probably know by now, in the Western Conference Finals 101-92. On Monday night, the Golden State Warriors topped the Houston Rockets to win that series in 7, going to the finals for the fourth straight season. I'm not excited about the Warriors being back. I don't really think they proved anything here in this finals. I don't think anything they do in the finals will really prove much, other than the stuff we already know, that they're the most talented team in the league by leaps and bounds. And unless they get upset or something weird happens, that they will again win the championship for the third of the last four seasons and second in a row with the Kevin Durant era upon us here. They fell behind 3-2 to a team in Houston where, you know, a good team, not really a team that should be taking down a dynasty like the 1991 Bulls that we'll be talking about later on in the show. But I feel like most of you, in that if Chris Paul doesn't go down at the end of Game 5, the Rockets probably win the series. But as it is, KD and the Warriors will be moving on. To his credit, Kevin Durant had 34 points, Steph Curry with 27 in the victory in Game 7. And that's that for the Houston Rockets season. They have a lot of big questions with, you know, Chris Paul able to possibly pick up a huge extension from them. You would think that the Rockets wouldn't want to give a 5-year huge money deal to an aging point guard, and that they'd like to maybe pare down those years a little bit. Clint Capella is a big question for the Houston Rockets in the offseason, obviously. So, you know, not all roses, but Daryl Morey and that organization does a great job, and we will see going forward what buttons they push. Teams like that, you know, and the Celtics are in this category too, that made major moves after, you know, successful runs already for those seasons. So it's interesting to see some of those, you know, quote-unquote smartest guys in the room, the Danny Ainges of the world, you know, not afraid to make those bold moves and to shake up the roster quite a bit from season to season based on how things are with their outlook. And speaking of that Eastern Conference, the Cavs, of course, topped the Boston Celtics 87-79 on Sunday. Both of the road teams win the Game 7s in the conference finals. LeBron James, ridiculous all series long, all season long, all career long, all lifelong. Really, the adoration is reaching fever pitch levels, as it should for the most part. But you know how we are in this country. We like to deify those athletes that are number ones in the moment. And he's been number ones for a lot of moments these days. And credit to him, obviously. 35 points in Game 7. He played all 48 minutes on Sunday night. Enough has been said about him. The LeBron, the stands are all over there in the internet in full force and all over the place everywhere, saying he's better than Michael Jordan now. I don't know. I'd say they're about even. Who knows? It's pick your poison or pick your pleasure, I guess is the way of putting it. Everyone is kind of a prisoner in the moment, as we know, and everything. And it's debatable between those two for sure. I'll let everyone else have that debate at this moment right now, just enjoying the LeBron James ride while it lasts. But I wanted to bring up the three-point shooting numbers. Everyone is freaking out about Houston missing 27 straight on Monday night and at one point, and also 7 of 44 for 16% from three-point range for the Houston Rockets, 1 of 21 in the second half down the stretch. And then Boston kind of started that Game 7 trend, going 7 for 39 for 18% from three-point land, including Terry Rozier, who went 0 for 10. You know, it's the new NBA. It's the one that everyone has been saying is so fun to watch, watching all these guys fire up three-pointers. If you listen to the show, you know that I'm a little bit skeptical that that's the most fun brand of basketball to watch. But if you ask Boston fans and Houston fans how much they enjoyed all the bricks they laid this weekend, I probably think that they didn't enjoy it. And I'm not saying that the three-point barrage is not a good strategy, and I'm not going to go all Charles Barkley and say that you can't win by shooting threes. The Warriors did it, obviously, and there's the top teams in the league are pretty much all doing it. When you look at the final four teams, that a three-pointer is a huge part of the strategy for those teams and all good teams in the NBA right now. But there's always that chance that you're going to completely go cold, and especially when the pressure's up, things tighten up a little bit. It's not a coincidence that it happened to two great three-point shooting teams on consecutive nights in the biggest game of the season. It's an easier way to choke shooting from long range. You know how you don't choke is you use your athleticism, your physicality, those things that don't go away. Watch number 23 on the Cavs and let me know how nervous you think that guy is. Obviously, the adrenaline actually helps when you're talking about physicality and defense and those kind of things that require as much energy as possible, whereas shooting is more of a repetition and concentration type of thing. And I don't think that there's some great thing to infer out of these Game 7s, the cold shooting. But just that the old way has a lot of merit, too. You could play some good or very, very good, maybe great modern type of defense where you're defending the three-point line and also using the toughness on all forms of your defensive strategies and abilities. But you can also beat teams inside the arc with your skill and your physicality and your ball movement, and sprinkle in some three-point shooting as a complement to that. And I don't say sprinkle in as in not a lot, but maybe as a second option in some ways. I'm not advocating for drastic change for NBA offense. It's just saying that there are other ways to compete in this league. There's reasons that the Pistons fell short this year, and it's not because they didn't make enough threes. They were in the top five in three-point percentage, I believe, maybe right outside of the top five off the top of my head. Middle of the pack in attempts taken throughout the season as well. But maybe if they had a little bit more of that old-school dominant Detroit defense. And again, the dominant defense that I'm talking about now is a lot different than the bad boys and the going-to-work era, and that you need to counter the three-point line, maybe be a little bit more athletic on defense, a little bit more fast and quick, and cover a lot more ground than just being, tough and strong, your Ben Wallace's and Ricky Mahorns. But improve that defense for the Pistons. Maybe we'll see where things can go. But I can't help but feel just a little bit vindicated from the results of the Game 7s when I talk about how, just following the crowd and getting as many three-pointers as possible and shooters and have it all based around that maybe isn't the only strategy out there for long-term success. But again, two teams that rely heavily, obviously, on the three-pointer are going to be playing in the finals for the fourth straight season, and that it's Cleveland and Golden State. We'll have plenty about that going forward this week. But 9 o'clock Eastern on Thursday is Game 1. Golden State is 12-point favorites at home in Oracle in Oakland there for Game 1. And we'll talk, like I said, more about the finals later this week. I also wanted to pass along congratulations to the Pistons GT team. Moved to 3-0 with a victory on Saturday morning over the weekend against Celtics crossover, 65-61 in NBA 2K League action. 23 points and 5 assists from Let's Get It Ramo. 18 from I'm So Far Ahead, 14 for Insanity, who was a perfect 6-for-6. Insanity is our guy. We had him on the show, Locked On Pistons, early on. The Pistons GT team now ranked number 2 in the power rankings on the NBA 2KLeague.com website. The Twitch numbers overall haven't been great. I saw Mark Cuban, the Dallas Mavericks owner and a big advocate for the league, coming to the defense of some of the low numbers for the league viewings on Twitch so far, but also saying to have patience with it. I think they had 2,000 viewers on one of the weekends recently. But, you know, we'll see how it develops after the coaching search for the Pistons. Maybe we'll have some time to dive into the league a little bit more come June and July. Next matchup, 11 a.m. Eastern on Saturday. Pistons GT will look to go 4-0, taking on the Washington team, the Wizards District Gaming, which are 2-2 in the regular season so far. But up next, I'm going to be talking to the great Ken Calvert, Detroit radio icon and rock and roll. Part one of a two-parter that we'll have this week, talking about some Palace memories, Bad Boys memories as well. But if your company is interested in reaching men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. We are listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. So if that demo sounds like a good one to you, this is your spot. Plus, we've got reasonable rates. So email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes!
And now we're being joined here on Locked On Pistons by Ken Calvert, the voice that you guys all know, formerly of WCSX 94.7, pretty much the voice of rock and roll in Detroit for many years. Cool. And now hosting a podcast, the Ken Calvert Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and for our purposes, the longtime public address announcer for the Detroit Pistons as well. Ken, thanks for taking the time today.
Hey, Matt, it's a pleasure. Anytime, happy to do it. And ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'd like to ask you to please rise and join us in honoring America as Dr. Tim O. I forget who it. We had a different one every single night. But, boy, I did that probably how many times, Matt? You figure I did it for 16 seasons, 41 games, 45 games. Can't do the math that quickly. But I said at this time, please rise and join us an awful lot in my career.
Well, too early in the morning for me to try to pull that math off as well. But so how did you were in the rock and roll scene in Detroit, and you've got a million stories about that. But as far as the Pistons, how did that come about with you getting the gig with Detroit?
Really, it starts. It's not a big story. It's I guess kind of interesting. When I was working at W4, the Pistons were playing downtown at Cobo Arena, and that was back during, Tyler and Durod days, going way back, maybe even before then. But anyway, I remember that the radio station that I worked for had season tickets, and nobody went. Nobody went to use the season tickets except me and another guy by the name of Buzz Van Houten. Couple of the sales guys, we'd go down, and it was a great time. There's only about 2,000 people, but watching some NBA basketball back in the early 70s. And so I think at the time, trying to remember, because there was Steve Grossman, there was Tom Ryan, Doc Andrews, Gary May was before me, then me and Al Mason. So that goes back, that's a legacy of probably... Well, Mason's done 16 years. I did 16. That's 32. You go back. So you're going back almost, 55 years or so. But anyway, I just happened to, I wasn't all in, but I enjoyed it. Thought it was a lot of fun. So I used to go to a lot of games because I got to know people through rock and roll at the Pontiac Silverdome. So I used to, go to a lot of games at the Silverdome just purely for fun. You know, it was a fun team to watch. And they had a guy by the name of Gary May who was doing the PA. And I went to enough games that I started to, with my buddies, I would impersonate him. You know, and, he just had a really deep set of chops, man. And I can't really do it this early in the morning, but he was just like Detroit ball out of bounds, that sort of thing, game show announcer kind of a guy, and he did a really good job, so I'd impersonate him. And long story short, something came up where I got to know Matt Dobek, the public relations director for the Pistons, and I would kid around and I would do it after the games up in the main event. We'd have a ginger ale. And after the game, and Dobek said, "Hey, I'm going to call you if Gary May can't make it. He's calling in a lot, especially in the preseason, because he coaches football." And I said, "No, I can't do that, man. I don't know the game well enough to do it." He said, "You don't have to know the game. You got guys sitting on both sides of you." All you have to do is, you know, when the guy tells you, you know, basket by, whatever. Just say the name and say it with some enthusiasm and, you know, 24 seconds. You just learn the basic rules. Kind of making, it's kind of sounding boring at this end. But anyway, turns out that one of these days, Dobek calls me and says, hey, Gary May cannot make it. I got to have you tonight. I said, what do you mean you got to have me tonight? I don't do it. And he goes, well, you got to do it. We're in a jam. You have to do it. So I went out to the Pontiac Silverdome, and I sat down, and they gave me a bunch of index cards, handwritten index cards, by the way. And so
way back.
Like, way back when. This would have been, well, 86, 87. But anyway, so I did the game, and I got through it. It was an exhibition game. So it was not that difficult to do, although there were just a ton of guys playing basketball. You know, they used everybody on the rosters. And even the veterans had no idea who some of the guys were. You know what I mean? And so I did the game, and turned out all right. It started off with, ladies and gentlemen, at this time I'd like to ask you to please rise and join us in honoring our country as Karen Newman will perform, you know, our national anthem. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's meet our guest, the Chicago Bulls. And then we're good to go. You just do the game from there. So it came off well. I mean, you know, it worked. I knew how to read off a card. And I got through it. I don't think it was great. You know what I mean? But it was good enough for Matt to call me back and say, hey, that was great, man. It was great. If you want, you can come back and do it anytime you want. I said, well, you got somebody. He goes, yeah, well, if anything happens to him, you're my guy. I said, well, I'm not your guy. I can't do this all the time. And anyway, he called me about a week later and said, hey, I need you to do it again. And then he said, I need you to do it again. And I said, well, it sounds like Gary May either quit or what. He goes, ah, he's coaching football, man. He can't do any of the preseason games. So can you just do, you know, he said, can you just do them? And I said, sure. So I kind of started to get to know the guys at the table. You know, Dwayne McLean and Ron Campbell and some of the scribes. I'd see, Mitch Albom. And I'd see, all, you know, the a lot of the TV guys would come out, Freddie McLeod. And we had a good time. And we'd go up to the main event afterwards. And as Mickey Redmond would say, have a couple of ginger ales. And, you know, we'd see each other the next time. So then it just became, at the end of that year, Dobek called me and said, look, I'm going to make a change. And he said, Gary May's having more and more. He's doing very well with his business, and he's going to have a tougher time. I don't want to split the season. I want consistency. I want you to do it. And I said, I can't. I'm doing radio, man. I have a lot of things I got to do. And he said, well, I think it might cross-promote your career pretty well. So I went to the guys that I work for, and they said, that'd be huge. Are you kidding? Man, they're coming on. They're going to be great. Yeah, do it. And so I said, okay, let's see how it goes. I'll do it for a year, see how it goes. And that was it. I started doing it, and I started liking it. And the rest, as they say, is history.
You mentioned Matt Dobek, obviously a legendary PR guy that's from Central Michigan University, where I went to school, and we miss Matt and all the contributions that he made.
Think about him every day, man. Yep, every day. Great, great guy.
And you mentioned, obviously, the signature thing that Pistons fans remember Ken Calvert for in terms of the team.
Joe Dumars.
Is Joe Dumars. Joe,
yep.
And of course, you got to do it for us. And how did it come about?
Oh, boy.
Well,
I'll tell you what it was.
Dumars
was starting to come on. And, you know, he was a small guard. He and Isaiah would be in the backcourt. And I just remember that when Dumars would start to bring the ball up the court, I kind of thought that people would get into that Lou Piniella, Lou Whitaker, Lou anybody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That they would start to I guess what I really thought was that people would just start to go, ooh, kind of create this, like, you know, organic sound effect in the background.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's all I was trying to do. So when he'd make a bucket, I'd go, you know, Joe Dumars. and nobody got it. I think they just thought it was a guy with a bunch of U's in his name. And so I was actually kind of like waving my arms like, come on, folks. You know what I mean?
you're leaving me out to dry here.
Yeah, come on. I'm looking like an idiot here. But it became, you know, it became a thing. And so I think after 2 or 3 years, it became, you know, people like, you are the guy that says Joe Dumars. And I went, yeah. And so I remember going to Joe one day, and I said, hey, Joe, we don't talk a lot. I'm Ken Calvert. And he said, Ken, I know who you are. You know, he was so, so meek and almost shy. And I said, hey, look, do you mind that I do that a little over-the-top Joe Dumars thing? And he went, Ken, when my mom tells you to stop doing it, that's when you'll have to stop doing it. In the meantime, just keep doing what you're doing.
And, that's awesome. The seal of approval from the Hall of Famer.
I went right to the guy. You know, I got a pass. And so it just became, then it got to be, you know, it was like, you know, hey, man, you're killing me here. How many are going to score tonight? You know what I mean?
I got to be on the radio in the morning.
Yeah, you're killing my bit and you're killing my voice. You know what I mean? And then the other players started to hate it. The visiting players, it really pissed them off. You know what I mean? I remember getting some serious looks. I remember a lot of coaches looking down at me like, you little punk. Shut up.
Especially if Joe D goes for 35.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and then I think what I did do is, especially if Joe would ever go to the line, I would, you know, at the line for Detroit shooting to number 4, Joe Dumars. And it was like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do that. You know, I mean, it was almost that I was starting to get the looks like, hey, don't push it, pal. Don't push it. You know, in other words, and then Daly and I, Daly realized that this was really it was going to be a fun time for a few years. And everybody was kind of getting their own props. You know, he was getting, as the kids would say, a ton of love, you know, for his outfits. And both the Brendans, Malone and Sir, were getting their own little shows. And Bernie Smilovitz did a show called The Chuck and Bernie Show, and I was the staff booth announcer. And it was a lot of fun, man. It was a ton of fun. And the building just rocked. Yeah, I would always end the game, while people were still in the crowd. Or I think actually it was sometime in the fourth quarter, I would say, on behalf of the Pistons and the Palace organization, we'd like to thank, you know, the 22,419, you know, our, you know, 155th consecutive sellout. You know what I mean? It was really cool. It was fun. It was fun.
Big thanks to Ken Calvert, and we'll have more with Ken, Detroit radio legend. Check out his podcast at thekencalvertshow.com, and we'll talk a little bit about that in part two, probably tomorrow, unless there's some news to discuss before then, in which case we'll hold part two of Ken's interview for another day. But today, Pistons playoff playback going back to 1991. Not much to say about this one. The post-championship Bad Boys came into the 1991 playoffs looking for a three-peat, three-seed, 51 season, but not an easy one, as Isaiah Thomas had wrist surgery in January, missing 12 weeks from that. The team brought back John Long to try to recapture some of the old glory, as he was a member of the mid to late 80s teams. I believe he won one ring with the first Bad Boys title in 1989. But this was not the injury that Isaiah had from punching Bill Laimbeer in the head in November. That was 1993, but a different hand injury for Isaiah Thomas. Unfight related, or so we think anyway. But more bad signs for the Pistons in the playoffs early, as they lost the first game in the first round against Dominique Wilkins and the Atlanta Hawks at home. The Pistons would then win that series at 5 with a blowout in Game 5 at the Palace, but not unscathed going through the first round, and then needed 6 games to get through Larry Bird and Reggie Lewis and the second-seeded Boston Celtics in round two. Isaiah missed one or two of those games with injuries as well. The Pistons would then get the top-seeded Chicago Bulls in the third round, the Eastern Conference Finals. The Pistons would lose game one by 11, then game two by 8 on the road, as 35 points for Michael Jordan led the way in game two. But then back at the Palace, game three was kind of the last competitive stand for the Bad Boys, losing 113-107. On a Bulls win that was paced by Jordan's 33 points and Pippen's 26, overcoming Isaiah Thomas's big game with 29 points and 25 points off the bench from Vinnie Johnson. Joe Dumars just had a forgettable series throughout in this four-game sweep. So that takes us to May 29th, 1991, 27 years ago today. Game four, 115-94 was the final. The Bulls swept the Pistons, knocked them out, en route to their first title as they would meet the Los Angeles Lakers and win in five in the NBA Finals. But the one thing we all remember from that game was 7.9 seconds to go. Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, Mark Aguirre, and possibly others walked out. I'm not sure. I think that might have been it, just those three guys walking off. That's the camera was behind Isaiah Thomas with Laimbeer and Aguirre ahead of him. I know that Joe Dumars stayed on the bench, according to published reports, and John Sally didn't leave as there was camera footage of showing him after the buzzer congratulating some of the Bulls. One report said that Dumars was the only one alone on the bench and that the five players on the court with Dumars on the bench were the only ones left. And Sally might have been one of those five guys, which is why he was obviously out there still. Not sure. Who knows? It was probably, you know, those three guys leading the way and maybe some others following because that was Captain Isaiah Thomas' decision, along with Bill Laimbeer, who helped concoct it. And Mark Aguirre, obviously being a good friend of Isaiah, probably went along for the ride, too. Obviously showed a lot of a lack of class in terms of what a lot of NBA fans thought, but and probably a lot of us Pistons fans kind of agree with that, at least to some degree as well. But a lot of disrespect from Jordan and the Bulls leading up to that. They said that the Bad Boys were bad for basketball and were already kind of celebrating the series win after winning game three as well. So that's it's tough. I mean, it's competitive professional sports, and sometimes there's bad feelings and lingering emotions. And we know that Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer aren't exactly the role models for sportsmanship, and that's where sportsmanship wasn't the thing we loved about the Bad Boys back in the day. It was their toughness and drive. And then, of course, few point out that apparently Bird and the Celtics did the same thing in 1988, walking out of the Silver Dome before the game ended too, but nobody makes a big deal out of Boston and those guys doing that. But anyway, I'll hand it off to Vinnie Goodwill, who was been on the show before, former Detroit News reporter for the Pistons, who's out covering the Bulls here for CSN Chicago, and takes a lot of crap for it on Twitter for being a Detroiter and a former Pistons fan too. He said in a YouTube clip of a sports show that I saw with David Kaplan here in Chicago, as they look back a couple years ago at the 25th anniversary of this happening, he pointed out that the at the end of the day, the final score in playoff series between the Bad Boys and the Michael Jordan-led Bulls, Pistons 3, Chicago Bulls 1. So I'll leave it to Vinnie Goodwill there for the final word there. But give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, and then another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And also give our Facebook page a like at Locked On Pistons-MattShook and give us a rating and review on iTunes as well. We'll have more with Ken Calvert probably tomorrow, possibly later in the week if news breaks. And this is your host, Matt Shook, for Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good one.